Blog Talk Radio.
Yoko?
Yes,
hello?
Hi, Sherry. This is Leo. Leo Steele. Are you? This is Sherry.
Oh, is this for the radio station, perhaps?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, wonderful! Great. I'll
are
get her
Sherry?
For you. One moment.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, I'll get Mrs. Brown for you.
Thank you.
I'm an assistant here.
Oh.
One moment, please.
Sherry, I believe she's at her office. And, hello?
Hi. Hello.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
How are you? Fine. How are you?
Good. I just introduced you to our audience, and, I went through your book, and I was just amazing how you decided to write the book, and maybe you can talk a little bit, just introduce the audience to who you are, as far as how you came to this discovery, and then we can discuss the Seven Commandments.
Yes.
Would that be all right? Yeah.
Yes, of course. I was raised in Iran in a Muslim, Shia Muslim family. I came to the United States at the age of 17 or so, went to a Catholic school in back east in Vermont, and studied engineering. And I'm married to a Jewish, American Jewish man, have been for quite some time, 30 years or so. And I was always interested in religion, but that intensified during the revolution, because at that time I had finished engineering school in America and I had gone to Iran. And
right. 1975-76,
and so I saw this, basically the history being made. I was there until 1983. I came back here and married my present husband, who is Jewish, as I said.
I'm very curious, or I was when I read your book, how you maybe you can explain to us. A little more, what the seven commandments are, all right, and discuss those in depth, because I have a different take on some of these, on all three of these religions, actually, because I don't agree with Orthodox religion, but I'm very curious how you. I think it's very important to understand the difference between the Shiite and the Sunni sects in the Middle East, and how they dominate the political world in the Middle East. Can you explain the two, what the Shiite and the Sunni differ,
yes,
and why they differ so greatly?
You're happy to. Sunni and Shia are different sects of Islam, and each one have, like, there's five different sects of Sunnis, three different sects of Shia. It's not something that Muhammad definitely not intended. But when Muhammad died, Shias are according to genes, and Sunnis are according to Khalifat. When Muhammad died, and officially before his death, he chose his nephew, since his sons died at birth. He had twin sons that died at birth. Since it was unofficial, when he died, his father-in-law, who was a governor and powerful and rich, somehow they took over the Khalifat, and they called it Abu Bakr, and they called themselves Khalifat, and they took over his position. That was not what he intended. That was, in fact, the people that God sent Muhammad to calm down. He said that these Arab nations are violent people. So when he comes and tries to bring the book and tells them how to be righteous after he dies, none of which, it's the same people that were from a different tribes, they were Muawiyah tribes, because of the money and power, they became Muslims. They called themselves Muslims. Everybody knew how to recite Quran, because the printing was not invented yet, or writing. And everybody recited, and they memorized it until the printing was invented, and they had a printing copy. It is written in a very poetic way.
May I just add, Muhammad, like Jesus, never wrote anything down themselves, okay?
No.
Now,
yes.
Supposedly, Jesus, his stuff wasn't even written down. It was supposedly...
right, after he died.
Yeah, word of mouth, you know, for 50 to 100 years.
Yes.
And none of these authors Matthew, Luke, or any of them who wrote the Gospels actually ever wrote those things. They were attributed to them because they knew they were followers, but they were never really, they never wrote any of this stuff down. So my reflections over and my studies over the years have proven that none of them actually are legitimate. They've all been politicized. They've all been become political, man-made religions. You know, and very few of them have any true connection to divinity. Most of them have all been perverted into some form of political governance, you know, like Christianity
is
gone into the Pope and the Vatican and politics and inquisitions and you name it. And then the Protestant faith, of course, has gone crazier. They went into, you know, the English church and, you know, all kinds of issues that developed through there and, of course, created wars and throughout Europe and, for centuries, just as the wars are created between in the Middle East and against those folks. One thing I wanted to ask you was the most offensive and maybe the most bizarre conversion, if you will, to Judaism was the Cathars in Eastern Europe, who became the Eastern European Jews, and they took that religion, though they weren't Semites, they took the religion and adopted it and became became that the Jews, basically the Jewish people that we know today,
right.
And the people who will occupy Israel. Israelites, right? But they're basically they're not even Israelites. These are the Zionists,
yeah.
You know, and they're mostly European. They're only 5% actual Israelites, actual original Jews that live in Palestine.
I say that in my book, actually, that after each one of these three prophets died, the religion means nothing until the next one comes. Muhammad actually disowning the names of Christianity because it didn't exist when Christ was alive. He was a Jew. His Last Supper was Passover. And Judaism, as far as the religion is concerned, and he actually says that they are equal to unbelievers. Of course, he didn't know that his own religion was going to become so many different sects. But he said that they should all be only the religion of Abraham believing in one God. So every one of these prophets, after they died, the religious people or so-called religious or apostles even, they changed it. For instance, in New Testament, Jesus Christ never said that Jews are going to come and get me. He said sinners are coming to get me. The apostles changed it to Jews because they wanted to segregate
I don't particularly agree with that. From what I can tell, from what I've read and over many years and arrived at, was the Muhammad, supposedly received his message while he was in a cave. Okay, he rejected society and he went out into the desert and he lived in a cave. And at that cave, he supposedly received a vision by Gabriel. Okay, he was totally disgusted by mankind, and he left, and he went to a cave, and in that cave he lived there for some time, and then he got vision by the visitation of Gabriel, and Gabriel told him that Judaism and Christianity were not following the commands of God,
No,
they were perverted.
Was not talk- He was not talking. He actually mentions in Quran that the Judaism and Christianity are just titles. The only thing that is important is monotheism.
That's correct, right?
And everybody should believe in one God, and that's what the word Islam means, just total submission to the one God. So anybody who came after that and flourished another religion, called it another thing, is wrong. Because Muhammad says over and over that Christianity and Judaism, they're titles. Moses, he called Moses a Muslim, and he called Jesus a Muslim. Because of the word, the meaning of the word. We can call them believers in one God. Therefore, according, first of all, I think that the word jihad is an obsolete word because it was for unbelievers, and there is not hardly anybody that is not unbeliever, and if there are, they are not going to be attacking you because you are a believer. But according to the same book, when people attack and kill all the Muslims, so-called Muslims, believers in one God, in 9/11. So the martyrs who are going to paradise are the ones who were killed, not these murderers who killed them, or everybody that has been beheaded is the one who is martyr and goes to heaven, not the person who, according to their own book. No, I'm not sure if they really don't understand Quran or they misinterpret it, because every religion, if you notice, Leo, after the prophet dies, it goes astray. Other people take over. There were apostles that committed so much atrocity about 200 years after Christ, in the name of Christ, all these crusaders, in the name of Christianity, Muslims.
Oh, yeah, not even the crusaders. I mean, the crusaders, and then you had the Inquisition. The Catholic Inquisition. They first destroyed all the Jews in Spain Jews throughout Europe.
Even Paul in Catholicism, he was a politician. That's why he wanted to flourish the name of Christianity. There was only one God, and that's what. And when they call Muhammad the seal of the prophet, it's that angle with three. I'm sorry, I'm speaking like angle and triangle is because I'm an engineer. I have this always mathematical mind behind it. But the triangle had to be completed so the circle of life would be balanced. The last prophet and the last testament was Muhammad and Quran. Anything that I have heard or I grew up listening to from so-called religious of Islam.
Good evening, this is Tammy speaking. How may I help you?
Yes, we were disconnected with Sherry.
Oh, who shall I say is calling?
This is Leo's L.A. Still Show, the radio show. We just got...
Let me get her one moment, please.
I apologize. We just got disconnected here from our guest. Should be connecting very shortly. Sherry's book is called "The Happiness: The Seven Commandments for Happiness and Prosperity," and our author is Sherry Sharifi Brown, and. Now, for some reason, we're not. not picking up. Understand why we're not reaching her.
One moment, please. There was a mix-up with this house phone. One moment, please.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hi. I don't know what
happened.
We
had such a nice conversation. All of
I know,
a sudden
we just got disconnected. I just went, look, I don't know why.
My train of thought. I don't remember. We were doing fine. But really, the Seven Commandments basically is about
right,
only
I wanted
the
to. I wanted to get back to that, but I just wanted to clarify that there were you said that there were actually seven commandments that were essentially in all three religions, and then you can go. Well, yes, go on.
That Seven Commandments I wanted to explain to you is the same as if you add the Ten Commandments of Moses to two commandments of Jesus to seven commandments of Muhammad, and then I dispose the redundancies. You know, they all say believe in afterlife, believe in one God. Then
right.
I come up with seven commandments that is the basic of the religion. And since I believe that God wants us to be happy, I believe that He's giving us these messages how to be happy and prosperous. And the message is really clear and simple. When they make it so difficult and there are so many branches and everyone is saying something different than the other one about religion, this is all hanging on the branches rather than hanging to the trunk of the tree.
Yeah.
So the trunk of the tree is the commandments, and the commandments, if you complete the triangle and do away with the redundancies, it comes up with seven. That's all it is. The seven commandments, if you realize, it's all of the prophets' commandments, everything they said. The rest of it is, you know, changed. Religion changes per time. So what was valid hundreds of years ago is no longer valid this day and age. But what doesn't change, to be able to be confidently thinking that you are living a righteous life, in my opinion, is only the commandments. Because the rest of it, as you said, was written by hands those days. Then they printed it. From hundreds of thousands of copies that, who knows, they couldn't read each other's handwriting, they improvised, and
exactly,
or they put their own opinion.
Everything was so...
always.
Convoluted. Yeah, sure.
Translated,
politicized, it was just... It was amazing to me how they could derive any kind of...
Don't even make sense anymore. Some of them, it's fine if somebody doesn't want to answer his phone on Saturdays. But this is not a God, because Muslims pray on Fridays. Weekend God. You can pray to him all the time, and they make it so difficult because every one of them want to say this is a different religion than those. Muhammad himself said this is not a new religion. So it's all about...
I always equate this to these different sects or these different religions to different political parties, essentially.
Came in after they died. You know.
What's that?
Yes.
Yeah, everything changed after
they
passed away.
After they passed away,
if they even actually did exist, my interest here was this. When I read these seven commandments of you, believing in the one God, that in itself is difficult because everybody has a different seems to have a different kind of perception of what God is. you know.
Okay.
And,
so now,
over the years, as I've grown and gotten probably more closer to self-realization,
it's not,
I found that,
right.
that I understand that one God quite a bit more than I did when I was a child, you know, or even as a, as an adult growing up, growing into maturity here. But I find myself still questioning why, if we are all one God, if we all have one God, then why are there why is there so much resentment toward the same God? Do you know what I'm saying? The same different people,
because
but the same
these
God.
Are different,
it's beyond,
different
beyond rational comprehension. Yeah.
Politics got in the way. Where does it even say that you can just shed some blood and you'd be a righteous person? Where does it say that you could molest the children? In fact, Jesus said this is the biggest sin. Why do they even waste their times praying when they commit the biggest sins? I think, in my opinion, if you believe in one God, and listen to his message. He's communicating to us through his commandments. Just take all of the commandments. Forget about the rest of it. It really doesn't matter if you're circumcised or not, if you pray at night or day. It says it in...
That makes me laugh.
No.
I know. It's like, you know, being circumcised is going to make all kinds of difference in your life. You know? To me, religions are so crazy.
Convoluted, I
don't believe in any of them. I've sworn off that. What I do believe is in one God, and I believe he's in all of us, and I believe he's in
That's
nature.
That's right.
And
That's
I come,
all you
I
need
come.
To know. Live a righteous life and pray to him continuously. And, you know, you have to be steadfast. You can't have a flaky shake. No, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about you per se. You have
can't
to...
Can't have a what?
You can't have a... Not one cannot have a shaky faith. If some calamity happens, if some calamity hits somebody, they shouldn't lose their faith. They should think, they should have enough faith that this happened for a good reason, there was a good reason behind it, and I guarantee you, they would find out later that this was definitely was some plan. They have to believe in faith. They have to have faith and believe that faith has a big thing to do with their destiny and their faith.
I do believe you in a large degree in that. And what is your faith? What is your belief in immortality and reincarnation?
I'm a spiritual. I believe in reincarnation. I believe that.
I do too. Yeah.
Yes. So, I converted.
Do you believe that it's a voluntary reincarnation, or do you believe it's an involuntary one?
It's not voluntary. No.
You believe what?
It's not voluntarily. It's not voluntarily unless if you go to extreme, it says in Quran that you either go straight to hell instead of being reincarnated, and every life. Time you get forgiven for the sins you have done. The rest of them, they either go straight, somebody like Jesus Christ, it says he goes straight to heaven, or somebody probably like Hitler will go straight to hell. That's what they say about reincarnation. Having said that, I do believe, because I converted to Christianity from Muslim because I related to Christ more. I believed him more. I didn't believe in eye for an eye or even some of the Quran teachings. And I think everybody should just they can do the ritual or they can't. They can fast. They can pray. The prayer is essential for the serenity of your soul because you feel good about yourself. Peace. Especially if you have faith that your prayer are going to come true. And if you have, the more you have faith, the more you see they come true. And I guarantee that. And if they read my Seven Commandments, they see why.
The other is ward off evil. Is another thing.
Yes.
Do not worship money, possessions, power, or any idols. I've done quite a lot of research over the years on shamanism and on other
yes.
religions and on pagan religions as well as on the monotheic religions. But there was always a warding off of evil by amulets or spells. You know what I mean? And what is your feeling to that?
My theory is that, you know, some people deal with evil by ignoring him or thinking he doesn't exist. My interpretation is that he does exist. He has power, but God is way more powerful. So avoiding evil, meaning getting away from jealousy. You know, sometimes you see that some people are rude to you for no reason at all. Instead of catching, think of it as they have a cold. Don't catch it. Don't catch their virus. Turn away and walk away. So you see that after you do that, you feel better about yourself. One of the reasons...
Over the years, I've been in so many different areas and businesses and met so many, many, many people. But the next part of that question or next part of that statement is, do not worship money, possessions, power, or any idols. And when you look at that, that explains really 99.9% of this the world.
The problem.
You know, maybe there's 1% of the world that doesn't worship money, possessions, power, or idols. You know.
But the irony of this is that the people who are successful are the ones who are more nonchalant about money. Is that shaking your heart when you hear about a money that you have to pay? I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about one. That is evil. That anger is evil. That jealousy is evil. So we have to work on that. We have to stay away from it. We have to think and do our best, because working is good for our spiritual life. We do our best, and if you can't do anything else, surrender and believe that God would help you. But don't go and do it on somebody else's expense, and your excuse is that, oh, I was poor, I didn't have money, I had to steal from this person. That's not an excuse.
Well, you know, I have to disagree with you on that in a way, and because when you're desperate, when you're destitute, when you're, you know, when everything's been taken from you and, you know, and you got nothing left, very, very, very difficult not to go that route,
yes.
You know. And
yes.
Especially,
but
oh, yeah, you know.
If you have faith, Leo, if you have faith and you know that the power like God and his energy would back you up, forget about what this priest said, what the minister said, what the rabbi or the ayatollah said. Just have belief in that heart of yours and the eyes of your heart that see with love and peace. Believe in God and know that you have that power behind you. And have patience. Do your best to find a job if you don't have money or if you have to provide for your family. Do your best. But then at one point you have to surrender. You can't struggle with the will of God, because I think it's futile. It's a futile effort to struggle. You have to surrender. You have to surrender. You have to, instead of always nagging about future.
I understand what you're saying. That is definitely a classic, philosophy. But to me, I've been fortunate, very fortunate in my life that I've been able to overcome a lot of adversities and get to stay on my feet, you know. But there are so many people that are born with these are things that have always amazed me. And There's so many people that are born with defects and massive disabilities and things, and they live in vegetative states. They're virtually most of their whole alive. I've never been able to understand that or to justify that regardless of how I try to.
How is it possible? It's conceivable.
Because, you know what I mean?
Sometimes,
because I look at the luck that I've had being physically, reasonably physically healthy. But I look at other people that are having these horrible cancers and these horrible diseases, and they're so, and I can't help but be
amazed at how unfortunate they are.
I have
to congratulate
you. How do you rationalize that? You just say, well, for the sake of God, go I, but with the grace of God, go I. But, when you think about there's 7.5 billion people on this planet, and over 6 billion of those people live on $600 or less a year.
I say that in my book.
Massive poverty and oppression that throughout the world, and there's only maybe 1.5 billion people that are living anywhere near, the kind of life that you and I and anyone else would normally have in some form of industrialized society. But one of the greatest questions I've had in my life is trying to grasp and accept that injustice, that incredible injustice that's out there, that the world is
I congratulate you for recognizing that if they divided all of the wealth and all of the health of the world to the number of the people, you are saying that you got more than your share. I got more than my share. And we have to be thankful to God for that. There is a reason for people's fortune or misfortune, which we don't know. It's definitely out of my knowledge. Maybe when we die, since I believe that not unless you die, you know what living is. Because it's just like a baby coming from the womb. He's happy in that darkness and coziness. He kicks and cries, doesn't want to come. And all of a sudden, his eyes open. I think when we die, we're going to really, for sure, understand a lot more than this. But it's lucky and it's fortunate because most people in your place and my place never think about that. They're always complaining. It's never enough. If they have 5 million, they want 5 billion. If they have billion, they want trillion. It never ends,
But we don't understand what people don't understand, and this is something that I've written about for years and talked about on my shows and tried to make people understand, is that money is made up, okay? Money it doesn't exist. It really doesn't exist. It's an idea, it's simply a tax. It's a tax, on your creativity. It's a tax on your, it's something that restricts us. In so many ways. Oh, I don't have enough money, so I can't do that. Oh, I don't have enough money, so I can't go to school. I can't do this. Can't do that. But everything is in all money is made up. There is no real money. The Federal Reserve creates money from nothing. They just create it. Boom! It is created. Right. And it doesn't have any rhyme or reason to it. They just they're legally they're allowed to create this debt, okay? and trillions upon trillions upon trillions of dollars worth of debt that enslaves all the countries, enslaves all the people to this small gang of, you know, criminals, okay, bankers, who run the world, and unfortunately, they also run all of the religions. You know, the money thrives in all these religions. The Vatican, probably the richest, is the richest religion in the world. You know, the Muslims, of course, is Islam. All of your sultans and all of your sheiks and everybody else. They have all the wealth and the power, and they're also the holy men. You know. So
do you know how
like,
many? Do you know how much atrocity and injustice have been done as the result of money and power?
Everything. Everything is for treasure.
So you can't call these people Muslims or Christians. They have nothing to do with God. They just shamelessly use these words as if they're Muslim. There is nothing about these people that tells me that they have anything to do with God. They use
it's no different than what happened with the conquistadors, you know, and the Spanish,
right.
And the, you know, they always had a Jesuit priest on their expeditions, and then they went into South America or wherever they went, and they slaughtered entire civilizations in the name of God and Christianity, you know.
Do you think this has anything to do with God? Any of this blood, any bloodshed?
No, it doesn't. But at the same time, at the same time, they think so because they were always all these religions were always. I mean, even Muhammad, it was the empire building the Islamic empire
The same
thing happened with Christianity, the way they had to convert all the pagans, all the hedonists, all the heretics, had to come under the sword, and had to die by
all of this
fire,
and
stuff like that.
Yes.
I mean,
they're not
horrendous. They're horrible.
They are not people who believe in God. These people are people who they are enslaved to their heart desires, and they have nothing to do with God. They call themselves, they tarnish the name of prophets by relating themselves to these prophets. They are nothing. What is, for instance, this terrorist group? What are they? But what do we call them here? Just serial killers. Anyone who enjoys and gets an exhilarating feeling over gushing blood out, it's a serial killer. It's not. It has nothing to do with God. It's all about power.
I wanted to ask you. That leads us to the other. Believe in the hereafter. And I believe that's true. You have to believe in. I believe we're immortal spirits, but at the same time, I have very difficult time believing in hell, especially since so many of us experience hell or worse than hell here on Earth. People in wars and fires, people in tornadoes and floods and earthquakes and stuff. I mean, these people are experiencing worse than any kind of hell I can imagine. All right, especially if they're dying from it or being tortured or being raped and molested, all of these horrible crimes that are committed against each other, mankind, and then at the same time, going to hell. I mean, where is this hell? I just believe if God is a merciful God, if our God is a merciful, truly a merciful God, His punishment, the greatest punishment that He could give anybody, would be to dissolve them, to cast them into an oblivion, where they're non-existent any longer, because I that would be the the ultimate, you know.
But this is just a temporary period.
Why would you want to continue?
Because he wants to test
a life, you know, an immortal life of nothing but debauchery and slavery.
Because he's testing the faith of people. He makes somebody good-looking, somebody ugly. He makes somebody rich, somebody poor. He is constantly testing us to see how our faith is towards him. I know, I understand. I couldn't agree with you more. I don't understand why some people have to be tortured in life when some other people are so comfortable. But I am positive.
Have you ever read the works of Neville Goddard?
No, no. What is
that? I highly suggest you look that up. All of his works are free and online now. He was a mystic. He was born in Barbados, and he was a mystic that was very, very popular in the 30s and 40s and 50s, and he died in the 70s. But his books are remarkable, absolutely remarkable. But he talks about the connection between man and God, and how they and he used to give seminars, he used to give talks, he used to remarkable man. I think he's got about 10 or 15 books that are online, free access to them, and highly Neville Neville, and the last name is Goddard, Goddard. And the works of Emerson were guided me in many ways to understand to get a better understanding of who we are, what we are, and how we create our own world. You know, how we create
our
own world
by
our own
perception. Yes.
Exactly. But what I wanted to ask you around that was, your fourth commandment was love your neighbor and don't steal, burn, or cheat, or lie. How do you justify, how do you justify somebody like Hillary Clinton or, you know, the politicians out there today that are running for president? They're almost, except for perhaps Bernie, they're almost all pathological liars. How do you assess that in politicians, and how do you see them? Do you see them as moral, or do you as moral, or how do you judge majority of politicians? I see most of them as Machiavellian, and
they're not supposed to be. You know, politics, there's nothing moral really about politics. It's actually self-explanatory. But what I'm surprised at, people that are presidents or their candidate now for presidency, I'm surprised at their lack of knowledge. When they interfere in third world countries, they have to have the basic understandings of the culture of that.
Exactly. One of the biggest problems that I faced with understanding this, when we went into the Iraq, when they invaded Iraq and the Middle East, I was
Iran
so appalled. If anybody at all from the Bush administration had read the Quran, they would have understood what kind of people they were up against, and they realized the kind of problems they were going to have.
Yes.
Because you're dealing with the people that aren't going to back down. You're dealing with the people who are,
ready to make it's very hard to overcome someone who's ready to die.
Yeah, exactly. And they will not allow themselves to be conquered, you know. And so this is the problems that we're dealing with today over there, and the facts are rising and the impossibility of conquering that area, you know, or even quelling the problems.
This didn't happen recently. This happened with Khomeini. What we did before Khomeini came, we helped Iranians since they were our allies. We wanted, just like Russians who had Cuba in our border. We wanted to have Iran as our military base in the border of
That's
Russia
right.
because
That's
at
right.
that time.
But the Shah, I mean, the Shah was overthrown, but he ran a military dictatorship. So it's like, you know.
Well, but he was our ally. Now, so
yes.
was Gaddafi, so was Saddam Hussein. Now we got rid of people who were whatever they were to their countrymen. And first of all, who are we to judge? Secondly, maybe these people do need, they're not ready for democracy. They need a
dictator. No, not a
We opened the road.
Two or three or four or 5,000 years under dynasties and under those kind of
so we overthrow these guys. We give, for instance, what they did to Gaddafi. I was appalled by looking to see what they did.
It was
somebody
horrible.
Killed
it was
my
but, you
parents.
Know, the rise of ISIS. Hillary and Obama created ISIS along with the Israeli Mossad. They created this nightmare. To take out Libya.
ISIS was created long before that, and about 100 years ago, they were defeated by Pahlavi when they started buying some armed forces from British and defeat them because they only were fighting with swords. After Khomeini came, they had a chance to start reinventing themselves. The reason why this al-Baghdadi is calling himself Abu Bakr and his assistant Omar, they're assuming these names because these were the Khalifat of those years. Otherwise, that's not their names. So what we did, we opened the can of worms, especially with people that totally lack of knowledge is really turned out to be our detriment because we didn't know these people. We are ready to be to kill for their cause. Whether their cause is just or not, they are definitely brainwashed to think that they're going to go to heaven if they go and kill innocent people, which is not true.
Well, in so many ways, our own military is brainwashed into that thought. You know, they're going in to invade a country to bring them democracy. You know what I mean? Most of them know that's not true. They're going
but
in to
why
fight
do we,
corporations.
Why did Carter do what he did? You know?
It's a complete and utter nightmare. But I wanted to before we enter that, I wanted to finish the other two or three different sacraments here. Or commandments. I mean, one is the fifth one that you have is be a charitable giver, and if you don't have money, inconvenience yourself. Charity has always been a major aspect of any religion, and love your neighbor. I got to tell you, quite frankly, I've had neighbors I cannot love.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
And some of these sayings of Jesus Christ is what it was not because he was a pushover. When he said, turn the
others.
I didn't
think he was a pushover, but it's just the.
No, when he said.
You know what I mean.
But when he said, turn the others.
Absolutely horrible. how do you love them? You know, I don't know.
But you know, when he said, turn the other cheek. Was because during his time per Roman law, if someone strikes you and you didn't strike back and they strike you again, they are condemned. By the same token, when he said love your enemy, it is because in the Old Testament it says, if you hate your enemy, by the same meat, the same measure, it uses the word meat like meter, by the same measure that you hate your enemy, his sins are going to be forgiven to him, the sins that he committed against you. So when he says love your enemy, he's not being nice. He wants the enemy to get the maximum punishment. He doesn't want to hate him. So
you're saying that if you love your enemy,
yes,
then he gets, then I still don't understand. Maybe I'm misunderstanding the word love here.
I have seen, not love, you know, but I have seen this in my own eyes. Love your enemy is when you not hating him. By hating him or taking an action against him, you are subtracting from the sins that he committed against you. If you want him to get the worst punishment, you have to forgive him. You saw that Jesus, everybody always says, forgive my enemy. Why? You think they love their enemy? They say
yeah,
that because
But they killed him.
What do you mean, who?
They crucified him. So it's like,
yes.
You know,
but
look what
happened. Killing was easy. Look what happened. Do you know that the look how many millions and billions of people are his followers now in the world. Look how killing was easy for him.
I know that. But what I'm saying is, yeah, he may have followers, okay? But all those followers are not really followers of Christ. They're followers of Catholicism, Muslim, Islam.
That's wrong, though. That's wrong.
And the majority of those followers are so perverted in their methods of prayer, methods of worship. I mean, even to the extent of satanic worship, you know. They believe that they're, you know, doing something wonderful. So, you know, for power and for money and for wealth.
But that's not, they're not, they're not.
But, you know, but it all falls prey. It all falls together under the same need for power, you know.
That's why I wrote that book. So I'm hoping that people would follow the seven commandments and stay away from evil and animosity and hatred.
One other thing that I've always had a problem with in all the commandments was, not that I haven't honored my parents, but I mean, you honor your parents. I mean, if you have a father or mother who are both who abuse you, beat you. Molest you. How do you honor people like that?
You have to because, and I said that in my books, that if you practice that, let's say that the whole thing of honoring your father is a lie, and you really, your father is not honorable. But since God is telling you to honor your father, it has nothing to do if he is worthy of honor or not. You're not the one to judge him. You do your duty by honoring him. At least do it for, what I say, over 60 days. Just honor him. You don't have to love him even in your heart. Just respect him and see what happens. You will see. You will see the difference. That's why I wrote the book.
and then the concept
you've been
of
most
praying.
Interesting, by the way.
It's difficult I know it's difficult to defend these things, but you know, you defend them on faith and you push it forward.
Right.
But you see, now here's something to me that I've been a political writer for 15 years and I interviewed almost thousands of people, but the thing that always probably amazed me about politics and government and how it's continually seems to be, I mean, for some reason there is a guiding hand. There's no, there's a providence, there's an invisible hand somehow that seems to make things work in some way or other. But so much of government, so much of politics, so much of what we're dealing right now is people with vision, okay? But you're dealing with people like a Hillary Clinton who are known criminals, who are known. In fact, you have two indictments pending against her that may come on next month. FBI indictments, but it's they're still, people are still voting for her. They're still believing in her. They still, you know, I don't have no idea what the hell people are thinking, but it's the same kind of mesmerization, the same kind of blind faith, the same kind of, I'm sorry, stupidity that people have with this blind faith in their own, in their religions, you know. And, the Ayatollah was a wonderful guy, you know, to many of those people. You know,
they saw 40 years later.
Yeah,
so
it's like I really have always questioned that, that I don't know if God is involved at all in politics, you know. But
I don't think the way they do.
I kind of doubt it.
But
not in that way.
But most of them really are the same way. It was a hypocrite. It wasn't John Kennedy.
Yes, hypocrites.
Blackmailing.
Yeah.
He was the most favorite president America ever had. Yet he was blackmailing his congressman, passed a law that he wanted, or legislation. They were all John Kennedy. Nixon got caught. Every one of them in one way or the other. The old ones were always impregnating their black slaves. They had so many children from these slaves, Jefferson and old ones. So it goes with territory. I'm not surprised about these people's dishonesty as long as they do a good job for American people.
Well, not really. Not many of them.
But it's not like you have a choice.
No,
you should run for presidency. I vote for you.
Actually, I am. If you go to my website, I'm running for a write-in candidate. Yeah. And, you know,
really?
It was amazing. Yeah, I've been running for since June of last year. And since then, I've had over 35 million visits to my website.
Oh, my God,
million.
That's interesting. I have
it's amazing.
One of the 35 million.
From all over the world. I mean, it's just
unbelievable.
Every country in the world. And I'm averaging 3 to 4 million visitors a month. It's just overwhelming. But, yeah, just because...
How old are you, may I ask?
I have my form on there and everything. But, I criticize and I talk and I... and offer different policies and so on. So, but my biggest, before I end tonight, I wanted to just say, I hope your book does well, and
thank you so much.
I really
much.
Do. I think it questions things properly, and I think it puts it out there for people to inquire. But I wanted to ask you, and this is totally off subject. But I know you are Iranian, is that correct?
Yes, and I went to college here.
Yeah. Do you by any chance do you know Andy Madadian? He's a famous Iranian.
Oh yeah, he's a singer. Is he a musician?
Yes.
Yes,
do you
of
know
course
him?
I do. Yes.
Oh, you do. Well,
I mean, not
do you
personally, but I know
or?
Of him. I think I met him, but I don't believe he remembers me. But he's been around for a long time.
Oh yes, no, I've had him on my program before. I had him several years ago, quite a few years ago.
Yeah,
several times. Yeah, he was great.
But my husband, as you know, is a Jewish American, so I don't really see Iranians that much because, you know.
Yeah, because I didn't know if you were friends with them because I know there's a Iranian community in Los Angeles there
unfortunately for me, I just, you know, I have to be with my husband's they get together, they all speak English, but they choose to speak Farsi, and he doesn't like to go to these places. And he also wrote a very nice book. Recently, he wrote a book called Time Bandit Solution, and he got an Axiom Award for that book.
Was that your husband?
My husband,
who wrote
Edward G. Brown. he wrote a book, and he won the Axiom Award for it being the best business book. It's called Time Bandit Solution.
Oh, okay.
In case you want to save a lot of time,
uh-huh.
I can send it to you. I'll be happy to send you a copy.
I would love that, yeah. Thank you very much.
Sure, I will. Of course.
Sure, and our show is done, and I want to thank you very, very much for being on. It was delightful
thank
talking.
Thank you so much. It was so nice talking to you.
Okay.
I wish I could meet you someday in person.
I do, too, but it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I hope
very
you can...
Very nice talking to you.
All right.
And
well,
hope
I wish you
see.
Night, and I thank
you
again for being on. And
thank
you
very
you
much,
luck.
And have a great evening. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good night.
Bye. Thank you.
And that was our guest, excuse me a second. That was our guest, Sherry Sharifi Brown, and her book is called The Seven Commandments for Happiness and Prosperity. And it's an interesting personal account and historical account of all the evolution and I guess the boiling down of religious dogma down into a handbook of more or less of what the of what religion really is. So I hope that you enjoyed that interview, and talk to your friends about it. And the book is available on Amazon, and it's out by, I believe it's Trine Day. No, Tate Publishing, I'm sorry. Tate Publishing and Enterprises. And I would check that out on Amazon.com, if you will. Okay, or go to TatePublishing.com. So good night, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I was going to talk a little bit about some of the. I'll bring that up tomorrow night. We talk about the State Department, Clinton Foundation donors, corruption, treason of Hillary Clinton, and the indictments that are pending on her, and more of her 30,000 emails that she deleted. Have been classified. So anyway, I want to thank everybody and wish you a pleasant evening, and join me tomorrow night when we do Union News. Good night.